Any questions? Where is our samadhi? Is it in awareness of being aware? We often have the perspective on samadhi as being a focused kind of attention or a place of a state of mind with a lot of stillness. And that is what happens when you bring mindfulness to one experience over and over again. Turn the attention to the breathing. Let go of anything but that. If the attention is pulled away from it, let go of that and return to the breathing. Over time, the mind just begins to naturally let go of other experiences and gravitates towards that one experience. And the mind begins to kind of quiet down that way, and the object also becomes stable and still. And actually, the object, when the mind really gets quiet, the object of concentration is a concept rather than a direct experience. And so that place or that state of stillness, stillness of the awareness, stillness of the object, is often what people mean when they're asking about samadhi, especially as it relates to this practice. Because this practice is not about staying with an object. That practice of concentration, one-pointed concentration, is cultivating a stability of awareness and stability of an object at the same time. We can think of the definition of concentration of samadhi as being a stability of mindfulness moment to moment, a stability of mind to not lose attention, to not be pulled out of the present moment. Non-distractedness within the field of many things happening in the moment. Non-distraction meaning you're not pulled into something and swept away by it. So that's another way to understand what concentration is in the commentaries. This is called moment-to-moment concentration. So it's described as a different kind of concentration. One-pointed concentration, where you stay with one experience. Moment-to-moment concentration, where the awareness is steady, aware of each thing. Aware, 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 aware. Over time, a continuity or a stability of the awareness over time. And that is a form of concentration. It is a form of the mind not being pulled into the hindrances. And that is one way that concentration is defined. The absence of the hindrances. When the hindrances fall away, the mind has some concentration. The mind is no longer being distracted by, pulled into thoughts, no longer losing mindfulness. And so the experience of this stability of mindfulness, and that's the way I think of concentration as at its essence, is stability of mindfulness over time. In one situation, it's stability of mindfulness with an object over time. In the situation that we're cultivating and what we're doing here, it's stability of mindfulness with whatever is happening. The feeling of those two experiences is quite different. In one case, the entirety of the experience feels very still, gets more and more still. The deeper the concentration, the more stillness. Stillness of object. Stillness of awareness. In this practice, the experience of stillness is relating more to the quality of the awareness that is stable regardless of what is happening. The experience can feel quite dynamic, not at all still, although we can taste or touch into a quality of a stillness of awareness, even as there's a lot of dynamic things happening. A kind of a sense of the awareness being unshakable or unflappable, or the mind, that balance, that equanimity of mind, not able to be knocked off by some random thing that comes in. And so this is a form of concentration. And what we are cultivating as concentration on this, in this style of practice. The power of the concentration of moment-to-moment mindfulness is that it allows wisdom to develop. Through seeing how our minds do what they do moment to moment, seeing the changing nature of experience, seeing the conditioned nature of experience, how one thing affects another, the more concentrated, the more stable the mindfulness, we could say, use that phrase, the more stable the mindfulness, the more momentum, the more continuity. All of those phrases are pointing to this kind of concentration. So the more continuity of mindfulness, the more the mind can, the more awareness can see what is happening in our minds. The concentration state of an object in my own practice with that form of concentration, there's a lot of understanding and learning that happens in that practice too, generally on the work to cultivate the concentration and as the mind comes out of concentration. But in the state itself, the mind has stabilized an object and is, you know, just holding on to that concept. And so there's not a lot of impermanence to see, not a lot of change. The conditionality that's experienced there is experienced in the construction of the state itself, what things support the construction of that very focused, stable mind. And then as the state falls apart, you're seeing the changing nature of that, that this is something that was constructed by the mind. It's not worth clinging to. It's also suffering. So you can see all of that with the concentration practice as well. But it just happens in different ways. And I would say that in this style of practice, it's fairly direct, the learnings that happen. And it happens from the beginning. What we're seeing, we're cultivating this continuity of mindfulness, this interest in how do things relate to each other. And even at the beginning of our practice, we're learning and understanding things about our mind. And the more stable the mindfulness gets, the deeper, it's like the deeper the seeing is. And this relates to a question that was submitted on a previous retreat. I could see attention jumping from experience to experience. I thought it was wandering mind, but I noticed I was aware. What's happening there? So this is that flavor of mindfulness being present moment to moment. Sometimes that's what we see. It does, as I mentioned this morning, the flavor of awareness might feel like it's flowing from one object to another, you know, smooth. Things replacing things, just a sense of kind of a very, very smooth experience of one thing following another. And that can feel pleasant, and it is just one way that it can feel, because sometimes it does have more the quality of like a popping, that something pops in and it's just, that's what's seen for a moment. And then it's just like that thing vanishes and another thing pops in, and it doesn't feel like there's much like flow or, so that's how it can feel sometimes. We interpret that, I think, partly because of practice habit or having seen that kind of very still, quiet concentration place in the past. We interpret this experience of the attention kind of going, popping from one thing to another and feeling kind of jumpy as somehow not being mindful. And so the question, the person who wrote that question, commented, but I noticed I was aware. You know, it's kind of like, gee, that's interesting. I thought the mind was just wandering, but there's awareness there. So this is a flavor of the mindfulness becoming more stable. So in the guided meditation this morning, I encourage you to just notice when you're aware, how is it? Sometimes it might feel flowing. Sometimes it might feel jumping or popping. Sometimes it might feel broad, many things at the same time. Sometimes focused and narrow. Sometimes when we do this practice, the attention does land on some object for a while. I've had that experience. It depends on the conditions. At the Forest Refuge at one point, I was doing this practice, just this practice, and there was a period of time when the building went so silent. There was a boiler problem, so all the water went off in the building, and there was no hum in the building at all. The mind just went so still. It was like there was just, I think it just, the attention just kind of connected to the quality of the stillness in the sound, or the lack of the changing nature of sound, and whew, it just went really quiet. I wasn't trying to focus, it just focused because of conditions. So that can happen. That can happen too. So I just really encourage a curiosity of, what is the mind doing? Are you aware? And there's a little bit of trust about that continuity of awareness being valuable at first, just because of our ideas about it. It's because our ideas about what deep practice, deep in quotes, comes from. A belief that if the mind is taking in a lot of different things and jumping from thing to thing, that it can't be seeing something very deeply, but perhaps what it's seeing is the nature of impermanence there. The nature of objects to come in and go. The nature of experience is impermanent. There's so many ideas about practice. Ideas about what good practice is, how it should feel, how it should unfold. And so many of those get shaken up with this kind of practice. There's suffering. You'll experience suffering around those ideas at some point. Some of you have reported this in your practice meetings. And when there's suffering, it's useful to check what's the belief. This practice has really helped me to understand that it really does not matter what the object is. I mean, that was what my teachers taught me in the Mahasi practice as well. But this practice really deepened that understanding, deepened the recognition that every single experience shows us the Dharma, can show us the Dharma. There's a way that, the way that practice unfolds in this style of practice it can be a slower, subtle. We start where we are. We come in from our home lives. We start where we are. We just like, am I aware? What's here? And it's like what we're aware of is the momentum of our lives, and you know, the thoughts that are there and the emotions that have been churning, and you know, that's what we're aware of. And we are not trying to set all that aside to still the mind down in order to see something. We are trying to see what is already here. And so it's a little bumpy at first. I gave this analogy yesterday in one of the groups that, like, we're coming in and we're at the surface of the water, and there's a lot of waves on the surface of the water. Kind of a lot of ups and downs, a lot of bouncing around, and you know, there's some continuity, maybe not a lot of continuity. It pops in, it pops out. But, you know, what you're meeting is the kind of the waviness of life in a way. And we explore meeting that waviness of life. And as we explore that, there's more capacity to meet the various different waves. We're meeting a patch of waviness on this side, and then another patch of waviness over here. And we don't have a lot of say in what patches are being explored. But there's capacity growing to meet a variety of types of emotions, thoughts, moods, reactions. Capacity's growing there. And continuity of awareness is growing. And it's kind of like we're getting familiar with the surface level of our minds. And getting familiar with that surface level of our minds, it begins to quiet down a little bit. Because a lot of the waviness on the surface of our minds has to do with our reactions to the experience. And as those reactions begin to settle, the waves begin to be much more soft and smooth. And then as there's more continuity, there seems to be a natural gravitation of the awareness and wisdom to subtler experience. So kind of like we're on the surface of the water early in retreat at first, and also earlier in our practice, we're learning about a lot of the stuff that, you know, carries us out of the present moment, and learning to have a relationship to it that's interested rather than having conflict with it. Learning about it, interested in it, recognizing, you know, even pretty quickly, it's really been fun in the last few years of teaching these retreats. Some retreats I teach for you know, no particular prerequisites. And I taught one in April where there were half a dozen or so, 10 people who'd never sat retreat before, primarily had only done meditation using the apps on their phone. And in like the first, second meeting, some of these folks were saying, "Wow, I'm just really seeing how much my mind has been like leading me around, like by my neck, you know, like a chain on my neck. My thoughts are just guiding the way, and I don't have to do that." So that the learning can be quite immediate, quite simple at this kind of ordinary level. So much value to seeing that level of experience. In some other forms of meditation practice, and forms that are more based on concentration or stabilizing the attention first with an object before opening up, that's more the Mahasi practice, the idea that you stabilize the attention and then you can open to lots of stuff going on. This practice starts with just opening to lots of stuff going on as best you can and learn about it. So it's like you're working at this level, the surface level, and stabilizing the capacity of mindfulness to meet all the craziness of our minds in the in the Mahasi practice and other forms of concentration practice, you're basically saying, okay, I'm just going to ignore all of that stuff, and I'm going to come to the breath or whatever object it is. I'm going to go into, it's like going under the surface of the water, go down to where it's a little more still, you know, consciously let go of all the waviness and go under the water. And so it's a kind of a narrow and deep kind of dive. And that's valuable. I mean, I've definitely experienced benefits from that. But that kind of narrow and deep practice is pretty easy to, you know, tip over. Something happens in our field of experience that's outside of what we'd been cultivating, practicing with, we'll just pop right out of it. And so so there's a deepening in that kind of focused concentration practice that can be a little unstable, kind of easy to knock over. And so it's maybe a little bit of a faster going deep, but it's a little more unstable. In this practice, we're cultivating the awareness on this more surface level, let's say, one of the more obvious stuff of our minds, getting some stability with not being knocked off by the whole set of the whole show, the whole catastrophe is. John Kabat-Zinn puts it, the mind becomes able to have more balance and equanimity with whatever happens at our more ordinary level. And there's a more continuity of awareness that happens. And then there's a kind of the mind begins to naturally gravitate to kind of a subtler level of understanding or experience, starting to see, you know, not just that, wow, there's this big thought that produces an explosion and creates suffering, but maybe begins to see, oh, there was an idea and a belief that arose, and that's where that whole mess came from. So the mind begins to start to see at a subtler level. And so there's a kind of like we deepen in the seeing. The more continuity of mindfulness is there is, there's more ability to see kind of what's happening, what's unfolding moment to moment. And the more that happens, the more that's seen, the more there's a kind of a deepening of understanding. And so I have this sense of the deepening of this practice happening very broadly and slowly. There's a kind of a settling of the mind across a broad scope of experience. And then it naturally gravitates down to a kind of another layer of stuff. And so it's a slower settle, but it's also very stable as it settles. And it carries more easily, I wouldn't say very easily, but carries much more easily into our daily lives because we've been working with the stuff of our lives in this practice. So it's a kind of a slower settle. And that was my experience at Shui Yu Min, you know, the first time I went there. I was there for like 7 weeks, I think, and 10 days in. I was like, I don't think this practice works because the mind is not very still. There's so much dukkha. and I at some point in that moment of seeing the judgment, you know, seeing what was going on in the mind, it's like, oh, well, what the Buddha said we're supposed to understand is dukkha, and boy, am I seeing that. So I'm aware of it. And so that was a kind of recognition. There's awareness here. It's just not seeing what I wanted it to be seeing. And that's one of the keys here, you know. It's like we don't get to pick. We do not get to pick what comes up. And we cultivate the practice of balancing the mind, opening to, allowing, honoring whatever arises. And as we've been saying, when the mindfulness is not able to do that, then we bring in some of our tools, directing the attention, focusing the attention on something to let your mind have a rest when it's not able to meet the experience that's arising. And so there's that skillful means. There's that skillful means. But the preference in this practice is to not interfere. The preference is to see if it's possible, you know, see what's possible if you just watch. See what's learned if you're simply aware. Well, this is what the mind is doing right now. And if what you end up recognizing is, you know, all the mind is doing right now is going off for 15, 20 minutes at a time into some story, you know, maybe not so useful to just settle back and say, well, I'm just going to let the mind do that. We need to check the awareness. Is there awareness? And if that awareness is not available, not easily able to be connected with, then something to help you connect. The strategies, those tools that might help you connect, attention to some object that's easy to connect with, to settle the mind, being in nature. Now that was one like set of things. I think I'll just set that one aside and move on to another question. And this one came up in one of the groups today. An experience or a kind of a description of being aware. Oh, just back to that very first question just for a second. So where is our samadhi? Is it in awareness of being aware? The samadhi is in the stability of the mindfulness. There may be awareness of awareness, or there may be awareness of object. So it's not required. I mean, it's like the samadhi like you don't have to have awareness of awareness to have samadhi. It may come in, it may not. So I would just define the samadhi in this practice as the stability of mindfulness moment to moment, continuity of mindfulness. That's the short answer to that question. What is samadhi? Continuity of mindfulness, moment to moment. So in awareness of awareness and being aware that we're aware, there can be different kinds of experiences. Sometimes it can feel like, I described several this morning, you know, sometimes it can feel broad, it can feel vast, it can feel focused, it can feel jumpy, it can feel flowy, you know, those kinds of things I described this morning. There's also some flavors of, you know, it can kind of feel like the awareness is coming up right in the middle of the experience. No separation. And it can also sometimes feel like the awareness is separate somehow. Like there's a distance, like You know, there's space around the object. So there's a feeling of awareness, and then an object perhaps that is happening inside of that awareness, as opposed to awareness being inside the object or inside the experience. It can kind of feel more like there's space or a distance, looking at it from a distance, not being, buffeted around by it. In the feeling inside, there's quite the sense of the dynamic nature of the experience, whatever the experience, changing nature of the experience, when we're in, have that sense of awareness arising inside of it. And these are both just ways that awareness can work. It's interesting, you know, sometimes the first time we stumble into awareness of awareness, it's like, oh, this is what it means to be aware of awareness. It may have one of these flavors of like looking at it from a distance or just being right inside of it. Often in hearing a lot of people describe their experience, it seems like the first flavor is more of that. Often, not always, but often the first flavor of people seeing awareness of awareness is that sense of a separation. Like, oh, this is awareness. And there are the objects. You know, so there's a sense of awareness as being separate from the objects. And often what happens, or, you know, what can happen with that is that there's a kind of an attribution of that's the right way. That's what it means to be aware of awareness. And I've talked to some people who are saying, well, you know, I'm not feeling that separation. It feels like I'm right inside the experience. So, you know, I'm trying to get myself separate from it. So again, that experience of separation is one way of noticing, being aware. In my own exploration, I described these two experiences to Sayadaw. After he asked me a question, he said, what is it like in your mind? What is the experience when there's no defilements present? And I came back and said, you know, I'm noticing at least two different experiences. They're very different. One has this feeling of separation, you know, this feeling of non-involvement, awareness not involved with the object. And that's very balanced, very easeful. And it feels like there's a separation between the object and the awareness. I said, but sometimes it feels like the awareness is right inside the object and there's no clinging there either. It's just very dynamic and very alive. And his explanation of the difference between the two, and I liked this because it really helped me to see something. It helped to put a view or a perspective or an understanding on the experiences. He said that the experience where the awareness was arising right in the middle of the experience, the wisdom and the awareness were interested in the fact that the experience and the awareness are happening at the same time. There's not a separation. They come up together. So the mind was very aware of that kind of joined nature of the experience and the awareness of the experience. They're not happening at different times. It's not like there's an experience and then a moment later there's an awareness of it. They happen together. So he said that experience is that the awareness and the wisdom are interested in that they're happening together. And he said that the other experience, the feeling of the separation or the distance, he said the wisdom was interested in the fact that they're not the same processes. They're different parts of the experience. And so the mind kind of perceives those as different things and creates the perception of a sense of separation. In this case, both of these I had experienced as the mind without, we could say, much greed, aversion, or delusion. Very, you know, quiet greed, aversion, and delusion. So it was pretty clear experiences. And I have recognized, too, in my own experience, that both of those experiences, in that case, they came without clinging. In both of those cases, it's like, yeah, it can be this way. Very, you know, not caught, not involved. And inside the experience, it can also be not caught, not involved. But I have seen that in both kinds of situations, we can be caught. So neither one of them in their own kind of state is necessarily without clinging. So the lesson there for me has been just check the clinging. You know, is there any kind of involvement? Is there any identification? Is there any attribution of, you know, this is right, this is the way it's supposed to be? Is there any sense of involvement? We can feel the clinging. You know, we can feel that tightness or that tension. So whatever's happening, we notice how it is. And is there any suffering with it? Are we caught? Is there a sense of being caught? What is it like to be caught? What is it like to be not caught? Sometimes that simple check or reflection or kind of like, it almost feels just like in this area, in the area of the heart, when there's a feeling of being caught, often in the area of the heart, there's a little bit of tightness or tension, or sometimes a lot of tightness or tension. That's often a really useful place for me to check in about attitude without like having to know any details about, is it greed? Is it aversion? I mean, even at that level, or beliefs that are happening, or is it frustration or annoyance? It's like, is there a tightness in the area of the heart, or is there a feeling of softness and openness, a kind of tenderness, a word that came up the other day in one of the meetings, a sense of softness and tenderness that's just allowing what's here. And that, you know, when there is that tension or that tightness, that's worth checking out. You know, the mind is caught by something. And I have found not needing to like parse it apart or figure out what the caught is, but just like, yeah, the mind is caught by something. It's identified, it's stuck. And that's what's happening. Just being aware with that. And sometimes there can be a pretty rapid fluctuation or shifting around an experience. Like, you know, at one point I was observing depression, a mild depression, and noticing this caught, not caught around it. And just, oh, there's that feeling of depression, of heaviness, and the mind is, it's just like, it's okay. It's not a problem. It's just what's arising. Wisdom is pretty strong in that situation. The mind is not caught by it. Seconds later, the mind just went right back into it. So this is a problem. I got to figure this out. Okay, caught. That's what's happening. They're just kind of noticing that fluctuation. Not trying to fix it when it's caught. And not trying to hold on to it when it's not caught. Not feeling like it's somehow a failing, a failure of the mindfulness, a failure of my practice if caught arises. its conditions. In the last few days, I've tended to control my breath, especially when sitting. Any thoughts on that? With this style of practice, are you aware that the controlling breath is happening? Are you aware that that's happening? Or are you lost? Again, the kind of the discernment to check, to be curious when the mind is controlled, when the breath is being controlled. Is this possible to be aware of? If it is, notice that controlling breath is happening and check the attitude. What's the relationship to that experience? I'm supposed to be able to breathe without controlling it. It feels much better to breathe when the mind is not involved in controlling it. There's maybe a little bit of aversion there to that experience. Again, the way this, my guess is that the controlling of the breath is something that has happened, you know, that sometimes it happens when we start to look at our experience, whatever we look at, you know, whatever we see, our habit of controlling, of like, you know, stepping in and being in charge of it, just shows up. And so it's probably a part of, it's not just about the breath, is my guess. So curiosity about the pattern, curiosity about the relationship to the pattern, and can there be that kind of honoring of it that I've spoken about, the allowing. It's like there's something to be seen here, something to be learned. Even if it's a pattern, you know, even if it's learning about a kind of an old habit or pattern of needing to be in charge of things, there's learning there, that the wisdom, the learning, the understanding that comes with this practice can help the mind to transform. The mindfulness and wisdom will move in the direction of releasing greed, aversion, and delusion. Slowly, not usually in our time frame, but that is the direction. So there's a trust in that. Can there be a trust that whatever is happening, it really, again, it doesn't matter. Controlling breath, it's another phenomenon. It could be an angry thought. It could be a tingling in the leg. What's the experience and what's the relationship to it? It really takes a lot of trust. I mean, we just don't believe at some level, we don't believe that something so mundane as controlling the breath can possibly be valuable to look at and understand and meet with mindfulness. All I can do is keep saying, it is valuable. We can say the language, it doesn't matter what you're paying attention to, and that there's truth to that. But whatever is arising, it matters to pay attention to it. It's like everything is valuable. Everything is worth that meeting with awareness and wisdom. Every experience, every single experience is worth that kind of honoring. That's very hard for us to understand. So if you know, having the idea, you know, noticing, or you may at times think, you know, And I did. It's like, this cannot possibly be leading to freedom. This style of practice is too on the surface. It's too, you know, too easy, too laid back, too relaxed. This cannot possibly be leading to freedom. Yet the awareness and the wisdom are what lead to freedom. Awareness and the wisdom of any experience. A couple of questions I'll respond to kind of briefly. In the Bahiya Sutta, which I mentioned yesterday, what is referred to by the term sensing? So I quoted that sutta, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. The commentaries say that sensing refers to physical sense experience, bodily contact, smell, and taste. So essentially these four, seen, heard, sensed, and cognized, kind of a shorthand for the six sense bases, with sensed touching into the smell, taste, and touch senses. And then the phrase you taught yesterday, yata bhuta, is it similar to Mahayana's the law of suchness? So I have not studied Mahayana. I don't know what the Mahayana teaching on the law of suchness is. There is the word, the same, I believe, Sanskrit, Pali, word, the derivation, a word in the suttas that is translated as such, the word that the Buddha used to refer to himself, Tathagata. Tata is the word that's translated as such. Tathagata, one who is thus gone, such, one who has touched suchness or something like that is the translation of that. So there is a Pali word that I will choose to potentially explore later in the retreat, that term such, rather than talking about it now. But I can't speak to the Mahayana law of suchness, but there's something to say about such. From the Theravada perspective, practice often seems to be about cultivating ways to live outside of nature. For example, fear and greed are some of the main ways that creatures survive in the natural world. Yet nature is where I get my greatest inspiration and my most beneficial practice environment. Do you have any insights into this paradox? The nature of, as the question mentions, you know, the greed, aversion, fear. These are not only very human emotions, but do seem to motivate a lot of action in the world, in the animal world. And it seems like that is nature. That's the way those minds have been conditioned. That's the way they've been shaped. That's the evolution of those beings. And so that is nature. And in our own hearts and minds, we have resonances of those natures. And yet our own nature is such that we can see that when those arise, it does not lead to ease and peace, and we don't need to follow them. And so that too is nature, our own nature, that possibility of freedom. And yet, you know, it's also a seeing into the nature. This freedom that we experience comes from seeing into the nature of our experience. We see into the nature of how fear works. We feel the suffering of that. We may, through the practice of witnessing nature, this is what we're doing, we can say the looking at our own experience is witnessing nature. We may at times, and this is, I think, often how we really begin to, how the mind begins to move in the direction of letting go, is that with the observation, with the curiosity about what is happening, we might sometimes see a fear vanish without anything in the world actually changing. We may see an aversion fall away without there being a getting rid of the thing that we thought we couldn't live in our presence, that we couldn't live with that in our presence. And we experience that sense of, oh, it was the state of mind that was the suffering. And so that too is nature. Seeing the nature of suffering. And so the practice in our own human minds and hearts, we are very fortunate that we have this capacity to see ourselves, to have this awareness of awareness. It really feels like that's what allows us to understand that fear, that greed, that aversion are additions in our minds, or that they are optional in our minds, that we can act and work and live in the world making choices out of compassion, out of kindness, out of love, rather than out of greed, aversion, and delusion. But they're deeply, deeply embedded in us. But there is this nature of the human mind that it is not necessary to live. We do not have to live with those states of mind the way animals do. So that's part of nature too. So that's one part of the kind of reflection here. And the other piece in terms of the, you know, nature being a place of great inspiration, I think to me it's because, you know, what we are watching, whether internally or externally, we are, the wisdom really appreciates alignment with nature. That's the kind of that alignment with reality. And so even seeing in the natural world, you know, yesterday somebody mentioned the cat chasing the bunny, you know, the way the natural world works. Our heart can be, you know, our heart might break with that and have a sense of compassion for the bunny, but not anger at the cat, because the cat's just undoing its nature, you know, just living its nature. So the alignment with nature, the alignment with the truth, mindfulness and wisdom kind of rest there. And sometimes I think being in nature, the external looking at nature, can support us that kind of, opening to the way the world is and seeing it so vast. I spoke about that last night, the vastness of the universe, and that this arising experience right now is just another expression of the universe doing its thing. Whether we're exploring internally or externally, we're seeing nature. And so when there's a curiosity and an alignment, or a willingness to be in nature, our hearts like that. And so I feel like there can be that inspiration that comes through the external being with nature as a support for us to help to understand our own internal nature. Understand that, that the unfolding of our own habits and patterns and conditionings, it's just like a star being created or dying. It's the nature. And it's both inspiring and beautiful and sometimes heartbreaking. But the heartbreak can be that quality of softness, of with compassion, rather than with anger, hatred, or fear. So let's just let the words go. Sit for a few moments.